This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Hack. Are the movies back? When was the last time you went to the cinema? Because in some country towns, there is not much else to do. And while a lot of cinemas have been closing in recent decades, surprisingly, some are reopening. G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. And coming up, I'm asking, are we falling back in love with the big screen?
I love physical media, like I love vinyl, CDs, and even, you know, I guess the movies kind of count as that.
I love the cinema. Yeah, I've driven over an hour from my farm.
Yeah, if you're obsessed with the movies, tell me why. Can you even afford to go much anymore? Because we know ticket prices have gone up in the last few years. Also coming up, the Labor MP who's come out publicly calling for a ban on gambling ads. It's a pretty massive move. He's my guest in a minute. First, though.
Hack.
Oh, look, it's just a bunch of dog whistling bull
on Triple J.
Yeah, it's pretty unlikely you have not seen that stunt pulled by Senator Pauline Hanson in Parliament yesterday. Not long after it happened, actually, we put it on Hack's Instagram. It's already clocked up more than 11 million views. The senator in the Senate wearing a burqa. Well, there's been a lot of backlash. It's been labelled disgraceful, disrespectful, even rage bait. And now Pauline Hanson has been banned from the Senate for 7 days. Alice Angeloni's been looking into it.
The only thing that you can be guaranteed of is that some girl in a headscarf on her way to school today is going to be bullied on the train.
Doing this kind of stunt, I think it weakens her case, it cheapens our parliament, and most Australians, I think, will look away in disgust.
I'm censured. Does it really worry me? No. It doesn't.
It's Parliament's last sitting week for 2025, and a lot of the focus right now is on Pauline Hanson. The One Nation Senator from Queensland has officially been booted from Parliament for 7 days, condemned by many in the community and censured by colleagues on both sides of politics.
You denied me and the people of Australia to have that voice. You chose to shut it down. This is not the first time you've done it to me.
Let's rewind to yesterday.
Dress code might be a choice of the senators, but racism should not be the choice of the Senate.
So Pauline Hanson walked into the Senate yesterday, arvo, wearing a black-coloured burqa.
She is disrespecting a faith. She is disrespecting the Muslims out there.
Senators responded quickly, with Greens, Independents and Labor senators all getting up to call for her to be kicked out.
Someone should pull her up on that.
Senator Faruqi.
And it is you in the chair.
Senator,
you should be pulling her up on that.
Resume your seat.
Pauline Hanson said she was wearing the burqa because she wanted a debate on face coverings, something she's done before, but the Senate shut her down.
Whatever our own beliefs may be, the sort of disrespect that you are engaging in now is not worthy of a member of the Australian Senate, and it should not be allowed to stand.
You haven't got deja vu. We have seen this exact same stunt before from Pauline Hanson back in 2017.
Senator Hanson has been parading prejudice as protest for decades.
That brings us to today, where the Senate debated what to do next.
The people will judge me at the next election.
Pauline Hanson gave a defiant speech, but the majority of her colleagues voted against her.
Those of that opinion say aye. Against? I believe the ayes have it.
Led by Government Senate Leader Penny Wong.
Senator Hanson mocked and vilified an entire faith, a faith observed by nearly a million Australians and the second largest religion in this country.
The Coalition's condemning Pauline Hanson too.
You can make a fair point, reasonable point, about migration settings, about integration, about assimilation, that Pauline has a voice to do that in the Senate.
Although Nationals MP Barnaby Joyce did have dinner with Pauline Hanson last night. Independent WA Senator Fatima Payman, the first woman to wear a hijab in Parliament, says Pauline Hanson's stunt was un-Australian.
It's not reflective of our general public. It's definitely not reflective of our Australian values.
While Muslim leaders say they're in pain today.
Muslim women in particular feel more vulnerable when incidents like this happen.
Ali Kadri from the Islamic College of Brisbane says his students have already experienced attacks.
One of our students was waiting to get picked up outside the gates of the school. This is a young primary age student, and an adult male passing in a ute was hurling abuses at her. And this is the experience of Australian Muslims. And whenever Pauline does these kind of stunts in the parliament, it escalates and radicalizes people even more, where people think it's okay to go and abuse a little girl, a little Australian Muslim girl wearing a hijab.
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there, hearing from you on the text line as well. James says, Pauline Hanson has long been struggling for relevance and attention and is again resorting to pathetic stunts. Yeah, look, I'm keen to hear what you think of what happened in the Senate yesterday with Pauline Hanson, 0439757555. I do want to get some more community reaction. And Yasmin Shadid is a Palestinian Australian. She's on the Islamophobia Register's Youth Committee. You might have heard her on Hack before speaking about Islamophobia, and she helps young refugees settle into Australia. Yasmin, thank you so much for joining us. I'm wondering what you thought of what Pauline Hanson did in the Senate yesterday.
Look, honestly, it was disappointing. Pauline Hanson did this exact stunt 8 years ago. I feel like repeating it makes me question, what's the point? It didn't raise awareness and it didn't save a problem and it actually didn't educate anyone. Young Australians deserve better than theatrics when we're talking about real communities and real people.
I mean, you help young refugees settle into life here in Australia. Some of them wear the burqa, right?
Yes, they do. So a lot of my clients that do come from Rohingya especially, they do come and they're fully covered and they do wear the burqa. So this is really going to impact them in their settlement journey, into finding employment, into getting into education. Because when you have someone like Pauline Hanson pulling a political stunt like this, it's going to impact them. Don't think it won't. It really will. And it won't make them feel safe. It won't make them feel belong.
Would you like to see an apology from Pauline Hanson?
I genuinely believe that Pauline Hanson needs more education. If she knew the real meaning of burqa, if she knew the real meaning of covering up, of wearing a hijab or wearing a burqa, it would be amazing if she gets educated first and then we hear an apology from her. So I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that Muslim women are forced to wear what we wear. For the overwhelming majority of us, covering is a personal and a spiritual choice. So it's about modesty, it's about identity, and it is about connecting to our faith.
Yasmin Shadid from the Islamophobia Register's Youth Committee. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
No worries. Thank you.
Hack.
This is what I don't understand with the government. They're looking at social media bans, yet they are perfectly happy for kids watching the AFL Grand Final to be push gambling advertising ads.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we're going to stay on politics now because another interesting thing happened today. Remember last week we spoke to Dylan, who's battling to overcome a debilitating gambling addiction. It's cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, if you remember that chat, you might remember Dylan told us he, like other Australians, wants gambling advertising to be banned.
I feel like gambling addiction should be taken as serious as all the other addictions. Like, you don't see ads on about cigarettes or drugs and banned ads. Yeah, I definitely would love to see the government do more, but to me it feels like it's getting worse.
Yeah, well, the research says the majority of Aussies do support banning gambling ads. An inquiry into gambling even recommended a ban be put in place to protect young people especially. But 2.5 years since that inquiry, the government has not responded. Today, a Labor MP, a member of the government, decided to come out publicly and support a ban. And he thinks all politicians should be given a conscience vote, which means they're allowed to vote according to their own personal views and not toe the party line. His name is Dr. Mike Freelander, and he's with us now. Dr. Freelander, thanks for coming on. I mean, this is a big step for you as a Labor MP. I just want to be clear here. You think that there does need to be a ban on gambling advertising?
I do. We know that gambling causes harm, particularly disadvantaged communities and in young people, and it unfortunately devastating communities like mine and in the outer western suburbs of Sydney.
Would you be satisfied with a partial ban, like that is a ban before, during and after sport being broadcast and not a complete ban?
Look, I think we need to start somewhere, and I'm not averse to starting slowly and building up, but I think ultimately we need to aim for a complete ban.
Okay, so you're saying a complete ban would be the ideal situation. Is there any hunger for this kind of action within the Labor Party that you can sense? Like, why do you think that if there was a conscience vote, it would be successful? It must mean that politicians are talking about this.
Well, politicians are talking about it. It's across the parliament. We know it's a problem in certain groups, particularly young men. And I'm a paediatrician and you know, I've seen a number of patients I've looked after absolutely destroy their lives with gambling, and I have just had enough of it. And we're being assailed by this heavily advertised and very well-marketed campaign by very wealthy industries. We are not saying ban the industries themselves. I'm not a wowser. I'm not someone who wants to stop people enjoying themselves. But I do know that the marketing is heavily targeted to young people. It's heavily targeted to high-risk people. And I think that, you know, it's past time and we need to do something about it. I personally think a complete ban is what's warranted. If we do that slowly, I don't see that's a problem either. I think we can do it over time, but I know there's a wish across the parliament to do something.
There are reports out that your government won't implement a complete ban. Is that disappointing to you?
Look, I personally think that there's been no decision made, and I've not seen any evidence that we're not going to do a complete ban. What I have seen is a lot of obfuscation across all levels of parliament about whether this is going to happen or not. There are, of course, some political concerns. These are powerful industries we're dealing with, and they have to be dealt with. And there will be some effects on industries like the advertising industry, like the media industry, and we need to see how they can be, those effects can be ameliorated. But I don't see any reason why we can't start doing things now.
There is this perception out there, Dr. Freelander, that politicians aren't acting because they don't want to upset the gambling industry, the big broadcasters. Would you like to see more of your colleagues do what you're doing now, come out and publicly say, we need to be acting on this?
Gradually over time they will. I think all we're doing is now putting it out in the open, and people will comment over time. You will find there is a groundswell of support for action on gambling advertising.
I mean, it is a big move for a Labor MP to come out like you are doing now and call for action before anything's been announced by the government. Are you worried about being punished for speaking out?
No. I think people will take what I say as me sticking up for my electorate, people that I've seen and the patients I've looked after and the families I've cared for. That's all I'm doing. I've come into politics later in life, and I've never been stopped from expressing my opinion since I've been in Parliament.
And just finally, I mean, Dr. Freelander, we speak with a lot of young people who have battled gambling addictions or are going through it right now. We've also spoken to the families of those who've lost loved ones to gambling addictions. They're really upset that there has not been action in the 2.5 years since the Murphy Review. They don't feel like they're getting their voices heard with politicians, that it's been a bit silent lately and they're not hearing back from politicians. Do you have any message for those people?
Look, my only message to them is that politicians do listen. There is concern across the parliament, and that we will get there eventually. It is not a good industry. It's not an industry that supports families or communities or young people. And we need to be realistic about change, but it will happen.
All right. Federal Labor MP, Dr. Mike Freelander, appreciate you coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got a lot of messages coming through on this. Someone says we lose billions a year to gambling ads. Absolutely, it should be banned. Someone else, when I was 18, almost every single boy I knew had some form of gambling app on their phone. Marcel in Bondi says, can we get the ban in place already? The impact on society is horrific. And someone else says, we are one of the world's leading gamblers and it should 100% be made inaccessible as possible. Look, I should also say we have been requesting a chat with the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. It's been a while since he's been on Hack. We want to ask him about this issue, other issues. We're not hearing back from his team, but we'll keep asking.
This is Hack.
I hear from children and young people nearly every week that they're reaching out to supports and are being turned away.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we often point you to a hotline when we're talking about sexual and domestic violence on Hack. 1-800-RESPECT. It's been running for 15 years and the number of people using it has increased dramatically in that time. Like last financial year alone, 1-800-RESPECT received 342,000 messages and calls. So what's behind that? Well, Shalila Madora has been looking into it.
It's the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and in Forbes in New South Wales, the community is remembering local woman Molly Ticehurst.
We'll always keep Molly's memory alive and honour her in any way that we can.
Molly Ticehurst was one of 103 women killed by a man last year. Her former partner pleaded guilty to murder 2 weeks ago. Jodie Dukes worked with Molly.
There's just too much of it happening, not only in our community but in Australia and worldwide.
The federal government today announced a funding boost to domestic, family and sexual violence support service, 1-800-RESPECT.
We set up 1-800-RESPECT in 2010 and it received 11,000 calls that year. In the last financial year, it received 342,000 contacts.
Social Services Minister Tanya Plibersek says the government is putting nearly $42 million into the service to help meet growing demand.
The need has grown really exponentially.
So what's behind that? Tanya Plibersek says it's a range of things.
I think it is because people know that the service is there. I think it's because some types of violence have increased. And it's also because people are better at identifying that what's happening to them is concerning.
She says the way young people treat each other is a huge concern.
Violence in relationships where the parties are under the age of 18, we've seen a big, big increase in violence in young relationships.
So I went to the police and I think it was the police that told me about 1-800-RESPECT.
Connor Paul is a victim survivor of family violence and is now a child and youth advocate. He reckons 1-800-RESPECT really helped him.
I was met with belief, I wasn't met with doubt or dismissal that I was a victim in my own right, which I say surprisingly because that is not common.
He welcomes the funding boost but says we need more specialist services for children and young people.
When I read reports that the government's investing, you know, $96 million into a Bureau of Meteorology website revamp that doesn't even work, but is investing $11 million in dedicated counselling for children and young people, I think we've got our priorities mixed up.
The Domestic, Family and Sexual Violence Commissioner, Michaela Cronin, specifically highlighted a gap in services for young people in this year's annual report. Connor says the wait times for services that do exist are simply not good enough.
In Tasmania, there are wait lists for therapeutic counselling upwards of 3 years. So a child or young person will age out of getting support before they're at the top of the wait list.
Connor wants the needs of young victim survivors to be front and centre.
I think we have a long way to go to make sure that it's on the agenda of every government across the country. Keep reminding the federal government that their job isn't yet done when it comes to ending family violence.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Shalila Madora reporting there, and I should say the full number for 1-800-RESPECT is 1-800-737-732. You can contact them anytime. Also, if this story has raised any issues for you, Lifeline is always there as well, 13 11 14.
Hack! It is still one of those few things in regional towns that you can do, either as a family or a group of friends.
On Triple J.
It's such a big problem, even the Pope is talking about it. I'm not talking about war or natural disasters. I'm talking about the movies, the movie industry. When was the last time you went to the movies? Do you love the cinema? If you do, why do you love it? Because we know this industry has been smashed over the past few years, especially during the pandemic, people turning to streaming platforms in huge numbers. And a lot of country cinemas closed down during that time. But around Australia, some are reopening. Some of these country cinemas, they're back in business. So why is that happening? Maybe it's happened somewhere where you live. Tell me about it. 0439757555. Hack reporter April McLennan headed to her local cinema in Port Lincoln in South Australia, 7 hours from Adelaide, to suss it out.
Welcome to Lincoln Cinema.
If you've ever been to a cinema in the country, you can picture and smell this scene. There's buttery popcorn popping away, little tickets being handed out, and here behind the counter in the carpeted foyer, the co-owner herself.
So we've just sent up a movie, so we've got a group of people up there watching Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Angela Perrins run the Port Lincoln Cinema for about 7 years.
But it has had a lot of different iterations over the years, including at one point being a nightclub. So it was a cinema nightclub for a period of time.
In some of the big cities going to the cinema, it almost seems a bit sterile, but you've got a chandelier.
Yes, we do. Yes, it's one of the iconic things that I think have been here for a while. And when we first took over, we tried to keep as much of the retro and the, you know, original in the cinema while trying to make it as upgraded and updated as we possibly could.
We're here to see Wicked and we're dressed the part.
Port Lincoln Cinema's about a 7-hour drive from Adelaide, and right now the cinema's drawing a crowd. It's the opening night for the new Wicked movie.
So I'm Elphaba, I'm the Green Witch Lady. I'm Glinda, but this is just things from my wardrobe.
Obviously we've seen a rise of streaming services, Netflix, Disney, Stan. Why do you think people still love coming to the cinema?
You come into one of the popular movies, the whole cinema gets filled, you know, little tiny town, nothing going on. We fill every seat, there's people lining up outside the door, and it's just so great to enjoy that movie experience with the whole crowd. You know, it's like watching a game of footy.
It's just like a fun night out.
It is, and you can get Chop Tops, which is my favourite part, of course.
The Lincoln Cinema might be full right now, but there are worries cinemas in general are in trouble. Earlier this month, Hollywood actors and filmmakers gathered to hear a sermon from Pope Leo in the Vatican. Turns out, even the Pope's worried about the future of going to the movies.
Cinema is much more than just a screen. It is a crossroads of desires, memories, and questions.
Box office revenues in many countries still haven't bounced back since COVID. In the US and Canada, cinemas just had one of their worst summers on record.
It doesn't matter which politicians or, you know, which celebrities are talking about these things. It comes down to people actually coming through those doors to make sure that their cinemas do continue to survive.
Back at Port Lincoln Cinema, the lines are starting to snake out the door.
I love physical media, like I love vinyl, CDs, and even, you know, I guess the movies kind of count as that.
I love the cinema. I think it's almost like going to a musical and experiencing all that raw emotion. Yeah, I've driven over an hour from my farm just to come see it for the opening day.
And what do you reckon the best movie you've had here has been?
Oh, that's a difficult question for me. I've watched 4 this week and I couldn't pick which one was my favourite out of those.
For Angela, she reckons, especially away from the big cities, cinema has never been so important.
I can understand certainly why some of the cinemas have shut down, but it is really sad. I think that they're a staple of any community town and any regional town, and I think that they create such a cultural opportunity for the community, and it's just really sad when that kind of filters away.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting there. We've got a lot of messages coming through on this one. Someone says, going to the movies is one of my favourite things, but with the cost of tickets and other people speaking the entire movie, it's just hard to justify going. Another person says, I'm 2.5 hours from Perth, opened a cinema in 2016. We were stoked. Can't afford to go often, but it is a nice treat. Oh, so someone was really happy there that the cinema opened in their local town. Another person, there's a few great affordable cinemas in Melbourne, Yarraville and Carlton. So, yeah, lots of people very keen on this. Look, let's go to an expert now, someone who has studied the movie industry, knows what kind of situation it's in. Rory Elkington is a senior lecturer in creative industries at QUT and is with us now. G'day, Rory. Thanks for coming on.
G'day. Happy to.
Are the movies making a comeback? What do you reckon?
I think this is a really interesting question because one of the first things I ask is, like, what are they coming back from? So I think there's absolutely some cases where the box office has been really significant for a number of films. Yet I think, you know, when people ask, are they making a comeback? I think they're asking about the number of people that are going every year. But this notion of, you know, whether movies are coming back or whether cinema is dying, it's actually a question that, you know, cinema has grappled with for 130 years. There's always been some new technological change that has come along that cinemas had to grapple with. And time again, cinemas remain open and people find value in movie going.
Yeah, why do you think it is that cinema persists, that it continues to survive throughout all these different threats of technological development, other platforms, that it keeps going?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of layers to that. And I actually in some ways think the movie itself might be the least important. I mean, of course, it's the thing. It's the hook that gets people out and about. But in our research, when we've actually dug into the reasons that people point to for the sense of satisfaction, of relief, of focus, of connection, we're actually talking about the social aspects of cinema going. We're actually talking about the experiential aspects of deciding to go. I mean, part of the reason we talk about cinema going in our research is that bit about going sometimes gets overlooked. It's fundamental. We're leaving our home, we're engaging with people, we're heading out into the messiness of the world. And for all that kind of frustration and craziness, if we can actually sit down for 2 hours or whatever in a darkened cinema and share a story with people on screen, that, I think, it's that social experiential aspect that draws people back time and time again.
Yeah, we're hearing from so many people now who love the movies. Someone says, yeah, I'm obsessed with the cinema. I'm a massive horror movie fan, and seeing it in the cinemas really makes it a lot more immersive. It's also a tradition for me and my mum, that says that person. Another person says Newcastle movies reopened last week. It's so retro and fun. And someone else, going to the movies is one of my favourite things, but with the cost of tickets and other people speaking, it's really hard. Yeah, I mean, ticket prices have gone up in recent years, Rory. Do you think that is tending to lock a lot of people out?
Look, the cost of living crisis is real across so many domains, certainly in terms of entertainment and leisure and cultural activities. I mean, one thing that came through in our research, though, was that when you look, again, at out-of-home activities, so I sometimes think we have this false equivalency between Netflix or streaming and going to the cinema, because you can watch the same thing in both of those places, but they're radically different in terms of the activity itself and the kind of satisfaction that we get from doing it. So when you look at the cost of cinema going and the cost of a ticket, when you compare that against pretty much any other home out leisure activity, whether it be going to live comedy or a music or a gig or a theatre or opera or any other activity, cinema going actually measures up pretty well in terms of the cost of that activity itself. So even though those challenges will remain around cost, we've got ABS census data that still reminds us that it remains Australia's most popular out-of-home cultural activity, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Let's go to someone who's on the line now. Samantha's with us. Samantha, you like the movies. What do you like about going to the cinema?
I think it's just a great way to catch up with friends as well. It's the first thing that me and my friend will think to do if we wanted to catch up. Like, our love for movies has grown over the past couple of years, and we've discovered that there are some cinemas that have such an affordable price where you can go and enjoy yourself and not have to worry about, like, the expense of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hearing from a lot of people right now. Samantha, is how often do you reckon you go to the cinema with your friends?
Oh, at least 2 to 3 times a month, even more sometimes if there's good movies on.
Yeah, wow. Okay, I guess it depends on the movies. Obviously, you don't want to be going and watching rubbish. Samantha, thanks so much for having a chat with us. I'm speaking with Rory Elkington from QUT. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. We're talking about cinema, how popular it is, if it is coming back. There's a bit of a resurgence there. I mean, Rory, we just heard from Samantha, obviously loves going with her friends. It also feels like there's still quite a bit of money in that big part of movie making for those big blockbusters. Is that the case? Like, what do the box office numbers tell us?
So despite the fact that we've had fewer larger tentpole kind of big Hollywood blockbusters coming through, since COVID, we've actually had a remarkable number of records set. Films like Minecraft, films like Super Mario Brothers. Wicked is just out now, and it's just grossed the second highest opening weekend for any film in Australia this year, and the largest movie adaptation, which is kind of a weird box office record to set. So these really, really big films are coming along and they're doing incredibly well. We're going to have Avatar dropping soon, and that's going to be another story where cinema suddenly becomes, and a certain film becomes, a really phenomenal part of the kind of national conversation. Even people, you know, your uncle that doesn't go to the cinema will go and see Avatar. Like, it has that kind of draw that other films don't. But the reason I think they're called tentpoles, these films, is that they hold up a lot of other films. So it's that idea that because often the best way to see trailers and learn about new films is by going to the cinema. So I love these big films because they actually create a space and a reminder, and they reinforce that habit for a lot of smaller films, a lot of films that, you know, aren't those huge blockbusters, but still really, really deserve audiences at cinemas.
I just want to quickly check though, Rory, you're not looking forward to any time without the movies. Like, you can't imagine that in your future, a world without the cinema.
You're describing a deeply sad world. That is not a world that I want any part of. And obviously I know people that don't regularly go to the cinema, and that's fine. Obviously they're not bad people. There's no judgment there. But for someone who deeply, deeply loves movies. And look, Dave, I've been to hundreds of films in my life. And to tell you one thing that doesn't change is when I settle into my little seat and I start looking at the screen and I can feel it about to start, I always get that same sensation. It never gets old.
It
it's always exciting.
Well, look, thank you for just confirming that if you don't go to the cinema, you're not a bad person. Rory Elkington from QUT, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And some more messages coming through. Someone says, cinema is one of the few places you're forced to actually switch off and detach from distraction for a few hours. Also love when they save old buildings. Someone else, though, says the cost of a movie is the same price as a month of Netflix, which, yeah, interesting point. And another person says cinemas are just going the way of old drive-ins. They're dying. All right, that's all for Hack for now.